So yesterday was the first day of the Trump impeachment hearings in Washington with the acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, that's William Taylor, and Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent, testifying before the House Intelligence Committee and providing new details tying the president to the center of this particular scandal. Now, Brooke Spector is a U.S. foreign policy expert and associate editor at the Daily Maverick. He was running out to, I think it was maybe Woolworths or one of those other shops to get his biltong and everything else because he was going to be spending the whole day in front of that television set watching this unfold. Brooks, good morning.
Good morning, Kino. Actually, I ended up with a whole bunch of double espressos. Although we did eat our dinner on a lap tray. So, you know, there you go. Five in the afternoon till who knows when in the evening. Yeah. This is just the first of many. The second shot at this is on Friday, in which several more witnesses come in, and then there are others next week and so forth. But yesterday, it was almost as if you were watching two competing narratives, two, you know, competing stories about the same universe. Yeah. One was the fairly straightforward one of a president who and we're not going to use the phrase quid pro quo anymore. Please. Why don't we just talk about extortion or bribery attempt or something like that?
Yes.
The effort to manipulate the relationship between the U.S. and Ukraine through inducements in order to get a political favor that would personally benefit the president. And all of the shenanigans that went on around it and all of the clever ways that the Trump administration tried to couch the phrase. I mean, you know, when you watch a mafia movie, you never hear them say, if you don't do what we're going to do, we're going to kill you. It's always something like, if you do what we ask, great. Oh, and by the way, how are your children? You know, the signal is sent. The Republican narrative, on the other hand, was, oh, goodness, it's all just a bunch of nonsense. It's underlings, freelancing. It doesn't really matter. And even if there was the dreaded quid pro quo, it happens all the time anyway. And it was just a trivial thing. Besides, the Ukraine is full of corruption up to its eyeballs. And I mean, you know, 16 different ways of attacking the same set of stories. But one thing really stood out for me. It was funny in a way. Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican congressman, when they had their times, when they alternated, Republican-Democrat, he said, there's one person who isn't being called to testify, and that's the original whistleblower, the unknown person who sent the memo through channels to say something troublesome is happening. He's not being called to test, he or she perhaps, isn't being called to testify. And a Democratic Congressman, James Welsh, bless his heart, turned right around and looked at him and said, yeah, well, the man who started this whole thing was Donald Trump. We'd love for him to come and testify.
And Donald Trump would love to know who the original whistleblower is, because I'm sure he wouldn't mind him swimming with the fishes, so to speak.
Well, yeah, well, metaphorically anyway. And so that was, you know, that was a moment of levity in a sea of profundity. But I'll tell you something else. I was sitting here with my wife watching, and as you know, and some of your listeners do, she's originally South African.
Yeah.
And she wasn't in the U.S., of course, at the time of the Watergate hearings. I was. Yeah. And I remember watching it all. And remembering that it was a great moment in public education about the guts of democracy. And she looked at me and she said, this is fascinating stuff. This is where you learn about the real mechanisms. This isn't like the talking heads we get on cable news of one type or another. These are real people. These are real issues. And if enough people watch it, and this is the point, if enough people actually tune in and watch it rather than just get the truth is related to us by Sean Hannity, then there will be some public education going on and some real understanding about the importance of not letting things like this happen. And that can be, hopefully, seriously important.
Now, Brooks, We then talk about the effect of all of this on the voting population, right? We were talking about tweets and stuff going out. I mean, there's a huge percentage who don't care. I mean, there's the, what's it, MAGA, Let's Make America White Again. Those guys, they couldn't care. They just see this as a conspiracy theory to get rid of their President Trump. And no matter what you do, no matter what you say, they're going to continue believing that building a wall in Colorado is good to keep the new Mexicans out. Right? So,
well, I mean, yeah and no. And yes, you're right to some degree that the Trumpian cult will pretty much stick with him on almost any conceivable version of almost anything, regardless. I mean, if he, as he once said, I could walk down Fifth Avenue in New York and shoot somebody and my people would still be with me. And that may well be true, but there's an accumulative effect of the seriousness of these things as people watch it. And if the narrative gets clearer, that is, if the sleazy trade-off, the guts of it become real for more and more people, two things are going to happen. One is the polls are going to shift slowly but surely in favor of impeachment and conviction. And Republican senators, especially those who are up for re-election in 2020, they are going to be looking over their shoulders increasingly at the enraged citizenry and thinking, maybe I should be a little more cautious about where I put my poker chips.
Yeah, I mean, but those would be the people that are open to be swayed, obviously, and there would be...
Oh, sure.
There would be those. I mean, if one of our greatest looters of our time, the man who I think started and coined all by himself a looter continually, Jacob Zuma's anything to go by. If you look at his base, they will believe anything he says. No matter, you can throw the evidence and you can get them to swallow the evidence, they still won't believe it because they believe in the conspiracy theories. So it'll be interesting to see. Yeah.
You bring up Jacob Zuma, but I'm willing to bet, I don't wait to prove it, but that if there was a public opinion poll now that was well and carefully constructed and scientifically carried out, I would bet that the majority of South Africans were sufficiently disgusted with what happened that they would say, damn, he should be driven out of office. Yes.
Yeah.
Fitfully, and they wouldn't be happy about it, but I think they might say that. Because it became clear to all but the Zuma cult, shall we say, that there was something seriously amiss.
Yeah, and I think the point that I was making was the cult's always going to be the cult, but the level-headed amongst us, even if we have feelings one way or the other, would look at the enormity of the body of evidence and then see how that applies to our lives and go, actually, no, you know what? I don't like this. This is not the type of world my children should be growing up in, and we'll then make a mark based on that.
That's absolutely the key point, too. I mean, it's the question not of right this moment, but what's in it for my children and our posterity?
Exactly. Brooke Spector, thank you so much for your time. U.S. foreign policy expert and associate editor at the Daily Maverick.